Noel stops, hits, and the foul. Have yourself an evening. Holy smokes.
Marquise Noel bails out K-State last night as they move on to the championship game of the event that they're having down there at the Grand Cayman Islands as K-State wins in overtime. More on that coming up in just a little bit. Also, Wichita State losing yesterday. KU has their head coach back on the bench against NC State in the Bahamas. Battle for Atlantis, which is on this morning at 10:30 with the pregame on Z96.3 Lake. KU has locked up their football coach till 2029, and the college football playoff has been released in regards to the rankings. No shakeup at the top four, but there is after that. We'll discuss that. Chiefs and Rams play this Sunday. We'll give you our Sunflower Showdown predictions and score predictions for KU K-State coming up Saturday night. And an NBA player returning to his old stomping grounds last evening. And if you love NFL football, then you're going to enjoy tomorrow. There's three games on this docket for Thanksgiving. But first, we throw it to Dusty. I don't know if we're going to have an athlete of the week this week or not, but because we have no show tomorrow or Friday, but I do know that we have high school football title games, so I'll hand it over to Dusty for local.
Yes, the Thunder Ridge Longhorns will be in the state championship game coming up on Saturday, so they're the immediate area team that's our area that's still alive here, and they're 11-1, taking on 12-0 number one team in the state, the Axel Eagles, in that title game in 8-man Division II again on Saturday at Fisher Field. Axel's beaten Thunder Ridge each of the past two seasons in the playoffs. The Eagles went on to win the state title last year after beating Thunder Ridge in the semis. So this year, Thunder Ridge trying to maybe get that payback. Kickoff for the D2 title game is set for 11 o'clock on Saturday morning at Fisher Field. So again, Thunder Ridge really the only area team that's still alive from the NCKL in 4A. Wamego is still alive. They're undefeated and playing Bishop Miege in that 4A state championship game. That's of note. Also, the Division I championship game back in Newton in 8-man football on Saturday is at 3 o'clock with Little River against Wichita County. Cunningham against Ashland in 6-man, and 1A St. Mary's will play Inman. 2A Kingman faces Nemaha Central in a matchup of unbeatens. 3A Andale against Holton. 5A Mays against Mill Valley, and 6A has Manhattan against Gardner-Edgerton. So those are the matchups for the state championship games coming up this weekend. And for a complete look at kickoff times and locations for those state games, you can visit ncksports.com.
All right, let's go by one. Let's see who is going to win.
Okay.
Say one by one. Let's go one by
okay.
one. So let's go back.
Yeah.
Ready? Start.
Yeah, we'll start with Axel and Thunder Ridge, I guess. And
all right. Anybody picking Thunder Ridge in this one?
No, I don't think
any. I'm gonna give it a shot. I'm gonna go Thunder Ridge.
Okay. Rock on.
Why not? Somebody,
why not?
All right.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Why not them?
Why not
this time?
Why not now? Why not this time? Yeah okay. Yeah, I can't go there.
No.
I can't go there.
I love
Thunder Ridge. I love Joel Strukoff. I love Thunder Ridge. And trust me, if they're listening, they're like, let's just add this to the bulletin board. Nobody thinks we have a chance. And it goes back to who cares what talking heads and us guys say on the radio or on TV or whatever the case may be online. As long as Joel Strukoff can get his kids to believe they can beat Axtell, they absolutely can beat Axtell. Having said that, I don't think they're going
to. Can we get that in the pregame speech, please? Can we get Wade Gerstner says you have no chance.
I didn't say no.
I know.
See, this is where you're taking words and you're stretching them. I didn't say no chance. I just said I'm not picking them to win.
Right.
No, I didn't. There's always a chance. Listen, there's always a chance in any game.
That's what
I mean. If the Colts can beat the Chiefs, it took a lot of collapsing. I mean, you know, listen, if Axtell goes out there, listen, I'll say this. I'll go out this far. Thunder Ridge has no chance to beat Axtell if neither team turns the ball over. They have no chance of winning. They're going to need a turnover or two. I think they're going to need Axtell to make a couple mistakes. Or the flip side of that is they're going to have to force Axtell to make a few mistakes. Okay. Now, the wild card is, okay, injuries. If Axtell's quarterback goes out, boom, you know, changes everything. You know, if Thunder Ridge gets two kickoff returns for touchdowns, that negates Axtell just scoring touchdowns, and now we have a boat race. So anything is possible, but if you were telling me, who do you have to pick right now, I mean, I don't have to think that hard about it, and I bet a lot of people the same way. And once again, that goes back to Coach Strukoff and Thunder Ridge saying, you know what? That's great. It'll be even sweeter when we can shove it in everybody's faces that we won it all. But you know what? They shouldn't do it to try to shove it in our faces.
No, no.
They should do it to win a championship and have a ring.
Right. Like, right. Prove the doubters wrong, but the doubters are there because I was there last year and saw it, right? Like, I saw
2 years
happened.
In a row they lost.
Yeah, and 2 years ago, you know,
they should have won.
Game. They should have won that game.
Mm-hmm.
They had a 20-point lead in the last 4 minutes that evaporated, and they end up losing. And last year was just a total domination by Axel.
Right.
So I was there to see it last year in person. So mm-hmm. that's why it's real hard for me.
I understand you didn't say no chance. I was just kidding around. I know.
I just want to make sure people don't come back.
Right.
I don't want that happening.
Joel Strucker goes
to the locker room. Did you hear Gerstner? He said we had no chance. I'm like, dear God, that's not what I said, Joel. No,
but
no, that's not what I said.
That's what you do with the pregame speeches. Yeah. You got to exaggerate it a little. You got to...
No, I'll go one step further. So Coach Strukoff rolls in like, you ever guys heard of Dusty Jason Wade on KD Country 94? No. No, we haven't. Anyway, those three guys think we have no chance.
That's why I want it in the pregame. Can we get the sports ticket in a pregame speech? I just think it would be great.
Am I supposed to record it and like send it to them so they can play it back to motivate them?
We're saying this on purpose just
to get extra motivation at Thunder Ridge. Yeah. Listen, if you're not highly motivated to win a state title game, you shouldn't need our words to get you even more motivated, okay? But there is no one in the state that knows the situation and how Axtell is that follows high school football. There is nobody that is picking Thunder Ridge to win. Except Jason Broadfoot.
Right.
Nobody is picking Thunder Ridge to win. And that is actually something you can rally around as a team and say, hey, we're getting disrespected. You guys, listen, we almost beat them. We should have beat them 2 years ago. We had them beat. Last year, we just had a bad day. All right, bad day. Who cares? We make adjustments in a rematch a year later. Now, Axtell's team is virtually the same team. Thunder Ridge team is different. And maybe that'll be a good thing for Thunder Ridge because they don't have the exact same, you know, starters on both sides of the balls they had a year ago. But no, if you told me I have to bet on this game, which we're not betting on high school sports, but if you told me I had to bet, I'd say yes, I'd take Axtell. And Dusty's going to take?
Axtell.
Okay, there you go. But Jason's taking Thunder Ridge.
Yep.
If Thunder Ridge wins, Jason will have a statue made out of him in bronze or whatever color you want in Thunder Ridge Longhorn colors, and it'll be right outside the football stadium.
Goodness gracious.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. How about that? All right. Okay. What we got after that? By the way, what does Thunder Ridge have to do to win this game? Dusty, you've seen Thunder Ridge and Axtell play.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about, the main things that they need to do. They cannot turn the ball over for one, that's for sure. And they've got to be in the spots to make tackles.
Yeah, they can't give up the big play.
Huge issue where... They didn't have the athleticism to match it. And you know, maybe sometimes they were at the initial spot to make a tackle, but they didn't make it, and it was game over after that.
Right.
Jason saw Axtell play. I mean, you know that you've got to be in the right spots. You've got to wrap up. You've got to tackle. And you got to get them at the point of attack, because if you let them get in the open field, you're done. Mm-hmm. Like, Thunder Ridge doesn't have the athletes. Dylan Bice has made some more of those, you know, open field big plays like on offense for this team this year. And I think that's going to be a factor and could be a factor for Thunder Ridge to maybe have a little bit better showing on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no turnovers. You got to create a couple, like you said yourself, too. Got to do some things in special teams, too. I mean, you can't just play head to head with this team and think you're going to win.
And everything's
on an even keel. There's no turnovers for either team. There's no big plays in special teams.
Mm-hmm.
None of that happens.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just head-to-head,
mm-hmm.
you got to have some things happen in your favor that are abnormal for a normal game for Thunder Ridge this year.
And that's what happens in pretty much every upset game.
Right.
It was just one quarter, but they got to do what Osborne did. Osborne forced some turnovers. Osborne moved the football, you know. But Thunder Ridge has to finish.
You have to finish.
Yeah. Unlike Osborne did in that game, Thunder Ridge has to finish when they get inside the 15-yard line. So if they can do those things, yeah, it's a little bit different. But four quarters is a lot different than one quarter.
All right. So Broadfoot's going to be a hero up in Kensington and Thunder Ridge area. If Thunder Ridge wins at all, he's going to be the only guy in the entire state, I think, in the media that's picking Thunder Ridge to beat Axtell. And I say kudos, and here's the other thing. I hope that happens.
Well,
I am big time pulling for Thunder Ridge. I think it'd be quite a story for Thunder Ridge because there are a lot of people to the east. And I get it. I get it. Axtell, Canton, Galva was the state championship game. We've heard this many times over the years, right? We've even said it on our side sometime. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing you know, like Osborne Hanover, I think one year, like, oh, that's the state championship game. Or I don't know what it was. But it was, we said the same thing about basketball sometimes. And then the team that wins that huge, unbelievable battle in the semifinals goes to the final. And they're worn down a little bit, or they spent so much emotion, okay, and yeah. effort that mm-hmm. the other team, like Thunder Ridge, easily beat Dighton, that they're just kind of rested and ready to go. And so sometimes that's in the equation, and I do worry about that sometimes. We're like, when people start saying, well, that was the championship game last week. No, it wasn't. I mean, yes, I know what you're meaning, but technically it wasn't. And all it takes is Thunder Ridge to play and put their best football game together. Axtell thinking, hey, you know, Axtell probably becomes in this a little bit overconfident maybe. Like, right. well, we whipped them last year, and we just beat Canton Galva, and Canton Galva's way better than Thunder Ridge. I'm saying that's what they may be thinking. I'm not saying I'm thinking that, but they may be thinking that. And then they roll in flat, and Thunder Ridge is up, you know, early 12-0. Next thing you know, you got a ball game.
Yeah, my biggest example of what you're talking about with everybody talking about it's a state championship game is actually the first game I ever remember seeing you at, and that was B&B and Jewel White Rock up in Jewel, and everybody's like, this is a state championship. Next week, B&B goes and loses to Victoria in the state championship
That's right.
game. And they, what, Victoria had three losses that
Victoria,
year?
Victoria got in like some kind of tiebreaker. They barely got in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. And so we were like, yeah, this is a state championship here. And that was a hard-fought game, right, that Saturday in Jewel. And so
took a lot out of you.
It did, and then Victoria ended up winning the state title. So you can get caught in that trap. You know, I think when you look at the rankings this year, everybody was saying that because they were ranked 1 and 2 all year, Axtell and Canton Galva, right? And so, but yeah, it's an uphill battle for Thunder Ridge.
It is.
No question about
it. It can be done, but they're going to have to play very well.
Neither Wade nor I are saying that they can't win. So
contrary to what Jason Brockway says. All right. So there we go. What's next?
All right. The afternoon game, 8-man Division I, Little River, Wichita County. This one kind of tough for me.
I'm going to say, you know, Little River, isn't Kevin Ayers the head coach of Little River? Dude, that guy is just an absolute winner. He wins championships wherever he goes. And you just don't want to bet against Kevin Ayers. I mean, that guy will have his team ready to go. I don't know much about these two teams, so I'll defer to Dusty to pick this game.
It's tough this year. These two teams met a couple years back, and I think I was picking Wichita County and Little River ended up winning. I think that's who they beat the year they won state. So I'm going to on air say that Little River is going to do the same thing. They'll get it done again this
year. All right. Sounds good. All right. 1A title.
1A is Inman against St. Mary's.
That's an interesting
I'm
game.
I'm picking St. Mary's in this one. I don't know.
Yeah, the Hurler kid is unbelievable. He's an unbelievable athlete. Very good basketball player. Very good football player. He's one of those kids that's good at anything that he participates in. I'll lean towards St. Mary's to win that one. I think I'll say that I think the competition, you know, a little bit. They played some bigger schools. I'll go to St. Mary's.
All right.
St. Mary's and boys made the state finals a year ago, and now the football team is in the final. St. Mary's have a good run here.
They were expected to be very, very good this year in football, and they've shown that out. They had a tough schedule, obviously, in the regular season of the Mid-East League that made them look like maybe they weren't as good as people thought.
That should prepare
them. Then they get
them
into 1A, and then it's like, yeah, they are as good.
Listen, you beat Centralia by 30. You're a pretty good team.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's 1A. 2A, Kingman-Nemaha Central.
That's a tough one for me.
It's very tough.
You know, everybody thought it was going to be Southeast Saline against Nemaha Central. I did tell a few people, watch out for Kingman, although I thought Southeast would still win that game. Everybody here, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but everybody, and I'd say I'm sure it's the same way up in Northeast Kansas, but everybody in this area is in their bubble. And they just automatically see Southeast and say, they're the best team. They're going to win it all. And I'm like, dude, I know Nemaha Central. I know people from there when I used to live there. We've crossed over during traveling basketball during the summer. I know the athletes. I mean, listen, I think Sabetha could have given Kingman or Southeast a heck of a game. Because I know Sabetha's very good with really good athletes. And Nemaha Central has a ton of size. They've got bruising running backs. They can throw the ball when they need to at times. They're not a full aerial assault. They've got two guys that are going to play D1 football more than likely on the line. And not one, two. They've got 6'2", 220, Cooper Hike. I mean, and his dad was a dorm mate of mine in college. And he was built pretty good and was a really good athlete. Then there's the freshman, Carter Hike, who's a really good player. Nemaha Central, Kingman. Going to be interesting because Kingman is a team that you know, they rely a lot with the quarterback, athletic quarterback, and the line of scrimmage. You would think Nemo Central might be able to control that, but then a friend can make some plays with his legs, and Kingman is athletic, but they have some, they're more physical than people thought they were going to be.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's a very intriguing game, but I'm going to pick Nemo Central. I've all year long, before the season began, everybody was all over Southeast Lean, and I said Nemo Central, I think, is the best team. I said it all year long. You know I have. I've said it every week. I was like, I think Southeast is really good. I think it'd be a great contrast in styles if Southeast and Nemaw Central met in a championship game. But I would lean towards Nemaw Central winning it all. And I've said that all year long before the season began. I will stick with it. The thing is, it's the same thing I said before the season, that Nemaw Central play Southeast Saline, contrast in styles. The only difference is Kingman is the team that has the contrast in style. Okay, so it's Kingman versus Nemaw Central, two different styles of football, but I think Nemaw Central is going to win, and they have a Glatzik as a head coach. And listen, I know Larry, who retired last year. He's a good friend of mine. He's a heck of a coach, won state titles in basketball and football. And now his son, trust me, he's a chip off the old block, and that's a good thing. I guarantee you Larry's probably helped him prepare for a game of this magnitude because he's been there. Michael's been a part of Centralia teams when he played for state championships, and now he's a head coach at Nemaw Central. I think Nemaw Central, I think they're going to win it all. I think Kingman's going to be very happy as a clam to be there. I think Kingman's going to bring it, don't get me wrong, but I'm going to pick Nemaw Central to win that game.
I agree.
Yeah, I've got Nemaw Central too.
And if it was Southeast, I would have picked Nemaw
Central.
Very
close game, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes down to it. And especially if Kingman continues to play defense the way they have pretty much all year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. Nemaw Central's played, I mean, they beat Holton. Holton's in the 4A state, 3A state title game. They've beaten Sabetha twice. They have played some really good teams. Kingman's schedule was a little bit questionable to some until they got in the playoffs. And then they've rolled Beloit and they beat Southeast. So Kingman's definitely legit, too.
Right. Absolutely. 3A, you mentioned Holton's in the state championship game. They're taking on Andale. This is how close can Holton make it type of situation for me.
Holton is a type of team that could frustrate Andale.
They'll frustrate them.
Because if they can control the line of scrimmage and they can run the ball and keep Andale's offense off the field that limits their possessions, then this game won't get out of hand because Andale just won't have enough possessions to make it get out of hand. So I think Holton, Brooks Barta's a hell of a coach. You know, Roger Barta's son. Brooks has been a state championship coach before at Holton. Holton's made runs many times before. Listen, Holton's not going to be backed down from Andale. They're going to hit him in the mouth. Yeah. It's going to be a physical game initially. I just don't know if Holton can hold up for four quarters against what Andale brings to the table. I think this is going to be a little bit lower scoring than people might think in regards to the overall score. But I think Holton will stay in it for a half. Maybe even three quarters. I think it could be very similar to what Southeast did last year, except a different style with Holton running the ball. But I do think Andale will prevail. But I think this game might be a little bit more competitive than people think it will be.
Oh, I agree that it'll be competitive at times. I'm in my mind, I'm thinking like a 30-14 type of score, like something like where 35-14 going to make it, you know, and get maybe a score or two on them and make them sweat maybe a little bit early in the game, but Andale pulls away. That's kind of
I'm with you.
My thought process on it.
All right, we got 4A.
4A, Wamego and Bishop Miege. Pulling for Wamego, definitely.
Me too. Miege will win, but I'm pulling for Wamego.
Yeah, and Wamego's got a really, really good team this year, but they're probably going to get beat by four touchdowns.
More than likely.
Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, don't get us started on Miege and others that are private schools. Okay, moving on.
Mays Mill Valley, 5A.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I'll say Mill Valley.
Mill Valley to win it. Yeah. Mays is going to give them a heck of a game, I think, with Avery Johnson, their quarterback. And then I think Manhattan's going to handle Gardner-Edgerton in 6A.
Yeah, many people thought Manhattan Derby was a championship last week, which Manhattan beat Derby twice.
Six-man, Cunningham, Ashland. Cunningham has been on a tear this year because they lost state last year to Natoma. Mm-hmm. You can tell they were frustrated with the way they played that game. This coming back this year, they've been dominating everybody. So I think Cunningham's probably going to take the six-man title.
All right, there you go. So all those games start at 1 o'clock, all at the exact same
time.
Except the eight-mans. So, and some people have complained about that. Like, how about we space them, do them a few different days, have them all at one site? I don't know if it'll ever get changed. Nebraska does it pretty nicely.
Yeah.
See the Nebraska West Side hitting a 45-yard field goal at the buzzer to win the championship.
Mickey Joseph stayed there.
And then they offered him a scholarship.
I mean, they were going to offer him anyway but he just made a nice little show out of it.
But if he went 0-for-4, maybe they wouldn't have offered him. I don't know. But anyway, he came through 5-for-5, hit the game-winning field goal for West Side. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. All right, as I mentioned earlier, K-State improved to 5-0, a 96-87 win in overtime over Nevada. Hit a 9-point lead at the under four timeout. Nevada went on a 9-0 run tied it, actually took a lead 80-78 with 14 seconds left, and Marquise Noel made the game-tying layup to send the game in overtime. Then Noel just continued to shine as he scored 9 in the extra frame. K-State wins by 9. Nevada was undefeated going in that one, too, weren't they? Yeah, so Noel finishes with 29 points, his highest total in a K-State uniform, 11 assists for a double-double. Keontae Johnson, a double-double, career-high 28 and 9 rebounds from the Florida transfer. Jerome Tang on the hard-fought win by his club last night.
He showed a lot of toughness. You know, they say offense sells tickets and defense wins games, but rebounding wins championships. And this is the first time that we've out-rebounded a team on both offensive and defensive rebounds. And, you know, they were a really good offensive team, and they were in a rhythm in the second half. It was the first time in the second half that our defense was better in the second half than the first, and it was away from our bench. So we grew up some there talking to each other, you know, so it's I'm so proud of the guys and their resilience, their fight, their toughness.
K-State moves on to the championship game of the Cayman Islands Classic, where they'll face 5-0 LSU at 6:30 this evening. All right, so this is going to get people's attention today. Apparently, there's too many little tweet videos of talking heads that are a whole bunch of stooges, as I call them. And maybe I'm becoming a stooge here, too, but I do believe this. I've watched K-State play some this year. You've seen them play, obviously. I've seen KU play. I've seen a few other Big 12 teams play. I know it's early, but I'm going to make two bold predictions right now. One. K-State men's basketball team will make the tournament in Jerome Tang's first year.
I'm in on it.
Okay, and I thought that before the season, but I definitely do.
I said they're going to be a lot better and compete.
I feel they'd be
a
bubble team
to make the tournament.
Now I think they'll be in the tournament.
Yeah,
that's my first bold prediction. My second bold prediction is whether they play KU twice or a third time in the Big 12 tournament, K-State will beat KU one time this year. How about that? Do you think that seems like a crazy thing, or do you think that actually will happen?
No, based on what I know about KU and what I've seen from them right now, is I'm totally in on it. KU's got two guys that majorly concern me offensively right now, and then after that,
and they've got young pieces.
And I know that, you know, some of those guys, like K-State's guys, are probably going to improve as the season goes on, and maybe somebody else will come in and be more of an offensive threat than just Jalen Wilson and Grady Dick. But, you know, MJ Rice might be a guy that gets better offensively as the season goes on. But, I'm in agreement on both of those, to be completely honest with you.
So you don't think those are crazy, bold predictions?
Not for me, but I might be having purple glasses confident about it today. But after what I saw last night, especially, they're doing things that were not typical of what K-State basketball has been
the last
couple
years.
They're
so much more athletic. I mean, that stands out to me. And if you're going to beat KU, you have to have athletes.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, Bruce Weber, even some years when he didn't have all the athletes, still was competitive with KU and even beat them a few times. All right, what do you think, Jason? Jason's kind of more the neutral guy here because, you know, we see it all the time with K-State and KU, and he's watching Creighton, you know, who's really good, and they won last night. But what do you think? You probably watch K-State a little bit, KU a little bit.
A little bit here and there.
Do you think that is a crazy prediction?
That's not a crazy prediction. Okay. I think, you know, even if they don't pull those games out, they'll be competitive in them. So it just might be a matter of who hits free throws that night, but I don't think that's a crazy prediction at all. I don't think Kansas is going to be the Kansas we know every single night the first two-thirds of the season, so we'll see where they're at in the final third, but I think they'll be ripe for the picking a few times here and there, and I think Kansas State is definitely one of those teams that can do it.
I'll tell you one other reason why I like K-State to knock KU off one time this year is KU doesn't have a dominant inside presence. Like McCormick had a good game against K-State in one of those last year, I remember. K-State always seems to have bigs that aren't very effective offensively, bigs that just, you know, KU has the advantage in the paint. Well, KU's playing KJ Adams at the center spot at 6'7", 6'8". KU's playing five out, basically. So that honestly, to me, helps K-State more anymore in regards to defending KU, yeah, because sure, there's not a 7-foot Jeff Withey, there's not a Cole Aldrich, there's not a David McCormick, a Uduka Azubuike, a Thomas Robinson. There's no dominant big man for KU, and that's something that's always plagued K-State.
What's one of the things, too, that when KU might be having some issues against K-State, and Bill Self will automatically switch to his own defense, right? Yeah. And Bruce Weber's teams had no idea how to play against his own. I've already noticed that Jerome Tang's teams know how to play against his own. You know why? Because he coached his own while defensively at Baylor, and he probably knows how to attack his own defense, right? And this team, that was the first thing I noticed when they were playing the exhibition game. Was it Pitt State that they played an exhibition? Mm-hmm. And the first thing I noticed, man, or Washburn actually, they were hitting the spots. They knew where to be against the zone. Mm-hmm. They knew how to play offense against the zone.
Yeah.
And so that makes you feel a little bit better when Bill Self goes to his zone if things if they're struggling man against some of these athletes that K-State has, and he feels like, and I know that sometimes it's easier said than done, that he's done that against more than just K-State, right? Mm-hmm. But it makes you feel a little bit better that you actually have a team that can compete against it when somebody runs a zone against you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a great point, because Baylor, they played predominantly zone for a while. Yeah. And then eventually they got the athletes to play man-to-man. And speaking of zone, I still, when I played high school ball back in the Stone Ages, I loved seeing zone, because that meant I had spots, I could shoot threes. I love zone. I didn't like man-to-man as much, especially if nobody screened for me, because I wasn't that fast. But I love zone. And I don't understand how college teams struggle against the zone so bad, except for the fact that they're just bad outside shooters.
They can't shoot outside, exactly.
Right.
And then they get stuck thinking, I have to shoot them out of the zone instead of knowing, hey, hit the high post, short corner, let's beat this zone, dude.
I know. To me, the zone isn't that hard to beat. I don't think a 1-3-1 is that super hard. I think that one takes a little bit more time to figure out, because you don't see it very often.
Yeah.
But a 3-2 zone, I don't think it's that difficult if you run it, if your kids do the right stuff. And I know that's true of any defense you face, but like, to me the 2-3 zone should be the easiest to attack. If now, granted, you need to have, depending on what level of ball you're talking about here, you need to have a guy that is a good athlete that can flash to the high post, hit the open spot, and then maybe distribute, turn, hit a 15 footer, put it on the floor, you know, make good decisions. But the key against a zone is patience and spacing and movement without the ball, finding the open spots. And if you just stand, I mean, I've seen KU carve it up the other night. I was like, God, they never even take one dribble. When teams dribble the ball and pull it back out trying to diagnose a zone, I usually go, they're in trouble. Because you should be able to attack a zone, especially a 2-3 or a 3-2. Now, the 1-3-1 is so unique that I think you should be able to solve that one fairly easy too, but I think it takes a little bit of time in game to adjust to it. But it is amazing that Bill Self will throw a, and he'll say every dang time, junkie 2-3, we spent 10 minutes on at practice. Now, I'll bet you they spent more than 10 minutes on it at some point in time, but it isn't the greatest zone. They don't practice it a lot, but all of a sudden Bill throws that out there and teams just go, they just like fall over all themselves and they can't do anything. And it's amazing, because a lot of these coaches, well, all of these coaches D1 level, are paid really good money. They have good coaching staffs, and it's either they know how to coach zone offense, but their players apparently aren't smart enough to figure it out, or just refuse to do it, because it shouldn't be that difficult. Now, if you're always settling for threes and you're never really moving it around, and like you said, hit the short corner, moving out the ball, flashing high post, and you're just moving around the perimeter and jacking threes, yeah, guess what? Then it's all about, can I make threes? And if I do, I look great. And if I don't, I'm horrible against the zone. But I just don't think it's that difficult to beat a zone if your players do what coaches tell you to do. And I think many times players just flat out lose their mind when they see a zone. Mm-hmm. Because they're so used to man.
Yeah. K-State was one of those teams under Bruce Weber that was going to try to shoot out of it every time.
Yeah.
And, like, it just wasn't – they didn't have the guys to do it, right? They didn't
now,
have
it does help to have a 7-footer where you can alley-oop over the top of a zone, too, in case
they
really
absolutely,
didn't have
that. Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. In fairness to Bruce Weber.
Yeah, and they have athletes now that they can do that.
They
might not have a 7-footer, but they got guys that can – you know, they've already shown that plenty of times.
Absolutely.
Backdoor alley-oops, things like that, that are working pretty well for them.
Not bad. K-State men against LSU for the championship of the Cayman Islands Classic tonight at 6:30. K-State volleyball team, 14-13, 5-9 in conference, and they have senior night coming up. That's tonight against Texas Tech for the K-State volleyball team. K-State women's team, they're in the Virgin Islands in St. Thomas. They're taking on Clemson tomorrow night on Thanksgiving at 7 o'clock, the Northern Arizona Friday at 4:45, and Arkansas at 7 o'clock on Saturday. And the K-State women ranked 25th in the country. They are 5-0 and, of course, knocked off number 4 Iowa 8 days ago there at Bramlage. And so that was a huge win, of course, for the K-State women. Gabby Gregory having a great year. Serena Sundell having a great year as well for the K-State women without Ioka Lee. Our focus on K-State athletics today brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. The K-State men, after they play LSU tonight, they will be back in action a week from tonight at Butler. That'll be a cool experience at Hinkle Fieldhouse, which is a historic place. And then K-State has a week from this Saturday, they will host Wichita State. That'll be interesting.
Yep.
Speaking of the Shockers, they lost to San Francisco. More on that in a moment. And concluding our K-State in focus, the K-State football team, of course, playing KU in Manhattan this Saturday night at 7 o'clock with pregame at 6:30 on Z96.3 Lake. K-State football team 8-3 overall. They're now 12th in the latest college football playoff ranking, 6-2 in the Big 12. If they beat KU, they're in the Big 12 title game against TCU. If they lose, well, then more than likely they are not going to be in the Big 12 title game in Arlington against TCU. That's our K-State in focus brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. As we mentioned, the Shockers lose yesterday in the Hall of Fame Classic at the T-Mobile Center in Kansas City. Shockers fell behind early, ended up losing 67-63 to the Dons of San Francisco in the championship game. Jaquan Walton had an outstanding game, 21 points, 10 rebounds. Craig Porter Jr., 16 points, 9 boards. Shockers 3-2 back on the court against Tarleton coming up this Saturday afternoon in Wichita. Jason's number 10 ranked Creighton Blue Jays picked up a 90-87 win over number 9 Arkansas
great
in the semifinals.
Game.
What's that?
It was a great game.
I was watching this, the last part of it. Semis of the Maui Invitational. Blue Jays are 6-0. They'll meet number 14 Arizona in the title game at 4 o'clock this afternoon in Maui. Arizona is also undefeated as they beat San Diego State 87-70 last night. Yes, the Creighton, that was a great game.
It was exciting.
I mean, athletic, offensively, the execution very good on both ends. Defense wasn't so great, but offense was great.
But at the same time, don't let those high numbers fool you. Those are two good defensive teams. It's just that there were a couple breakdowns here and there that gave up some easy points. But for the most part, Arkansas is really, really athletic and hard to get by on the dribble. But the playmaking and the shot making for both those teams last night was really top notch. And you don't see that a lot in November, especially on these offshore tournaments. You don't always get that in November, but two really good teams. You don't have to squint very hard to see Elite Eight, Final Four for one, or maybe even both of those teams.
Yeah, absolutely. The way they play last night, they're both capable of making a run in the tournament, no doubt about it, in March. Number 3 KU opens play this morning in the battle for Atlantis in the Bahamas. The 4-0 Jayhawks will face 4-0 NC State in the first round of the tournament. There's only two ranked teams in this tournament field. Tennessee's 22, KU's 3. So you'd sit here and go, KU's a heavy favorite, but then they nearly lost to Southern Utah the other night at home, although I think that was just them looking ahead to traveling and high and mighty because they beat Duke. I think KU will be fine. Bill Self back on the bench after a 4-game suspension imposed by the University of Kansas. And Coach Self, more than happy to be back on the bench.
I'm obviously excited to be back in paradise in this tournament. And we haven't been here in a while. I think 2013 was the last time we were here, and certainly excited to come back to not only be here in Bahamas and in Atlantis, but also to be with my team and playing in what is a very, very strong competitive field. And the field is even better than the rankings. So it's going to be a good 3 days that we'll learn a lot about our team.
It might be better than what the rankings indicate. I would agree with him there. I don't know if it's a super tough field, but I think it's a solid field. You got Butler, I think BYU's in it, Tennessee, NC State, so forth and so on. So KU NC State 11 o'clock, pregame coverage at 10:30 this morning on Z96.3 Lake in about 45 minutes with Brian Haney and Greg Gurley. KU football team extended the contract to head coach Lance Leipold. KU, of course, bowl eligible first time since 2008. KU 6-5 heading into Sunflower Showdown against K-State on Saturday. The extension would keep Leipold and Lawrence for the long haul, said to be through 2029. Don't have the financial parts of that equation yet. So I never felt Leipold was ever going to Nebraska. I never bought that. There's still people who think Nebraska fans still think Klieman may go to Nebraska. I've never thought that either. And then there are a lot of people that are getting on the Urban Meyer bandwagon now more and more, claiming they've seen him in an airport, claiming they've seen him on a plane.
hate private jet season.
I don't know where they're going with this coaching search. The Washington coach, he just re-upped, so it doesn't look like he's going anywhere. There's conflicting reports that Leipold had some interest in Nebraska, but Nebraska was ready to move on, or they already had gone in a different direction, and that's why Leipold went with the extension. Other people said he wasn't really interested, so who knows what the truth is. Bottom line is, Nebraska still doesn't have a head football coach. I don't know what route they're going to go, but I cringe when I think it's Urban Meyer, because... You know, Matt Rhule reportedly has talked to Nebraska and reportedly is out of the equation. I don't. Who do you have left?
That's the sad thing. Is like we're running out of.
Are we going to sixth and seventh choices like Bill Callahan days?
Yes.
Mickey Joseph's going to be head coach after.
When it all started happening, you're like, oh well, you know, here's a couple candidates, and here's a couple, you know, and then Matt Rhule gets fired, so that opens him up. But as things develop. Oh man, that 1% of Urban Meyer is now turning into like 5%, and now I'm just afraid. Oh God, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's just gross to think about it. But like you said, all these names are dropping off, and it just makes it just a little bit more likely. I mean, I'm not saying it is very likely at all, but. And here's the thing. If it's not Urban Meyer or Deion Sanders, the two big famous names out there, there's not any real huge name left out there. And it's going to be very, very weird the day they announce it. It's going to be underwhelming for a lot of people. And you just don't, but that's the thing is, you just don't know. You don't know if it's good or bad until it's good or bad. Well, and Scott Frost was supposed to be a slam dunk, right. And not just for Nebraska,
everywhere,
yeah. Everyone wanted Scott Frost that had an opening. So that was just, you know, a misfire, and so we don't know what's going to happen. Somebody that we've never heard of, some coordinator or whatever that isn't this huge name, may be the greatest person for the job, or they might go with Urban Meyer, and he might flame out again, and you just don't know what's going to happen until it happens.
Well, let's think about these for a moment. Scott Frost was a home run hire, and that didn't work out. So you don't necessarily want the home run hire.
Yeah.
Okay. KU thought they had a home run hire with Les Miles. Now we all thought that was bull-a-loney, but boy, they sold it like that home run hire, and that was a train wreck when we knew it was coming. Home run hire. You know, Roy Williams, when he was hired, nobody knew anything about Roy Williams at KU. And people were underwhelmed. They had just come off winning a national championship. We lose Larry Brown, and Roy Williams turned out to be pretty doggone good. Dadgum good, as Roy would say. Dadgum it. And then not a lot of people knew much about Lance Leipold. He's worked out pretty well, right? Wouldn't you say? You know, Chris Klieman was not a home run hire. In fact, K-State fans, some of them were disappointed because it was Gene hiring his buddy. I think that's worked out pretty well, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Nebraska,
I mean, they're on the cusp of playing for the Big 12 championship, so yeah, it worked out.
Right, absolutely. And so some of these home run hires everybody talks about ends up not working out, and sometimes it's the underwhelming hire initially, and then all of a sudden a few years later you go, you know what? I'm glad we didn't go after that sexy guy, the sexy pick, which right now obviously would be Urban Meyer or Deion Sanders. You know, Jamie Chadwell's one listed at Coastal Carolina. Maybe that's a underwhelming hire that might be a better fit for Nebraska.
I'm not in the coaching search right now because my team's not doing it, right? But like, so I
want a hungry coach.
Yeah,
moving up.
What I kind of find confusing is Nebraska wants to cherry pick two guys that have done that, right? With Leipold or Klieman, right? Like, so those names came into the process there. I don't know if Nebraska really truly fought and went after them or not, but they were very hot commodities according to the hot boards that were out there, right? But my thing is like, why can't you go find the next one?
Yeah.
Go find some. Don't just be like, oh, we might want to steal Klieman or Leipold.
Yeah.
Why not just go find that guy that's at North Dakota State, or maybe he's at South Dakota State. Maybe he's at North Dakota. Maybe he's at Alcorn State. I don't know where
he's at.
East
Carolina, Coastal Carolina.
Coastal Carolina, which would be kind of the Leipold situation, where he's at a lower tier FBS school and not an FCS like Chris Klieman was.
Right.
But if you can find that lower tier FBS guy and bring him up and let him do his thing, because Nebraska's never really done that. They've gotten either retreads or they've gotten a guy that they love that they thought that was their guy when it was.
Well, let me jump in. They,
Scott Frost, right?
Think about who they've hired since they fired Frank Solich. And Solich was within the unit. He played. He's a Nebraska guy, right?
Solich was a Husker guy.
Right? They love to have Solich back. Pelini was already on staff. Well, he knows the program, so he's our guy, all right? Callahan, that was like the sixth or seventh choice, all right? So there was nothing great about that hire. Mike Riley had no connection whatsoever, was not a home run hire. Neither was Callahan. Neither was Riley, okay? And then who was after Riley?
Scott Frost.
So that's the sexy home run hire. But once again, we got to get back to, you got to have a tie to the program. I don't think you have to have a tie to the program. You got to find the best coach available out there. Don't settle for Bill Callahan, okay? Right. Although they didn't really have much of a choice because everybody kept turning them down. And the other thing Nebraska needs to figure out is your job is not as appealing as you think it is.
No, it's not.
That's the biggest problem Nebraska has right now.
Yeah,
right?
There's so many that I was reading on Twitter yesterday that legit think that Lance Leipold
is beneath
moving
them.
To Nebraska is either beneath them or it is legit a better situation right now than Kansas. And I'm like, you're not watching the landscape of college football right now.
No.
You are not paying attention to what's going on in Lawrence, first of all,
yeah.
and to what's going on in the grand scheme because you're just so focused on what's going on in Lincoln, and that's it.
Listen, if you want to be successful as a coach, and Klieman is happy at K-State, or Leipold's happy at KU, listen, OU and Texas are leaving, and granted, they're not that great this year, but they're leaving, all right? So now you could be the top dog in this conference consistently, whereas you go to Nebraska, are you going to beat out Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State consistently?
No, you might have a once every few years window
where you do something special, like Michigan State occasionally does, or Wisconsin occasionally does. But could you win the division? Yeah, and then get your head beat.
But we don't even know what they're going to do with the divisions once USC and UCLA.
I was just going to add, USC and UCLA are coming in, and USC with Lincoln Riley, they are obviously very talented. That's going to make that conference even tougher from a football standpoint, whereas OU and Texas leave. So I know there's more money in the Big Ten, and there's probably more money on the table for a Leipold or climbing up there. But in regards to your longer-term success at where you are now, that you already know the landscape in Manhattan, you know the landscape in Lawrence, and now do you think you can't beat TCU over the next? You think they're going to be the dominant program or Baylor the next five, 10 years? There's no reason to say they should or shouldn't. You mm-hmm. could be that team instead of OU at Texas, whereas you go to the Big Ten, you're going to be probably fourth or fifth in the pecking order and maybe even lower than that with USC and UCLA added in. So to me, there is not. I don't think it is more attractive for Lance Leipold to go from KU Nebraska, other than there is more tradition in football at Nebraska. And if you want more money, more than likely Nebraska is going to give you more money. To me, it'd be more of a money grab because I don't think it's going to help you long term success as a coach. No. Because at Nebraska, at KU, 6-5 is pretty cool. All right, in Manhattan right now, K-State's 8-3. That's pretty cool, right? Yeah. K-State's 8-3 and a win away from making a Big 12 title game. Nebraska fired two coaches that won 9 games in 1 year. So that's beneath them. And that's where Nebraska's got to refigure this stuff out because KU, the expectations KU aren't anything close to what Nebraska's are. K-State's expectations aren't anywhere close to Nebraska's are for the most part. Now, there are some Nebraska fans, they understand we're not what we once were. But there are a lot that still think, well, we're just one coach away from being, you know, 10-2 and we're going to the Big Ten title game. We're going to get in the playoff and we're going to win a championship. No, you're not even close. You're not even close. No, oh, well, we've got 14 one-score games and we're 1-13. Don't care. You're not close, okay? You got to find the right guy, and you got to find him now. And I think the pressure is everybody wants the sexy hire, and I think that's a huge mistake.
Well, you had
the sexy hire, right, and it blew up in your face. And if that sexy hire didn't work with a guy that knows everything about the program,
yeah,
I'm not saying Urban Meyer wouldn't go in and win there. He would, but he could win a weak division and get to the Big Ten title game. But do I think Urban Meyer, Nebraska, is going to go beat Ohio State and Michigan in the Big title game? Probably not.
And as soon as he does win something,
he's
off to go somewhere south or NFL again or whatever. You know, he's just going to do what Urban Meyer does.
Hang out at strip clubs, yeah, get suspended, whatever.
And I do have faith in Trev Alberts, but I don't want to hear it has to be this. It has to be that. It just has to be a good coach.
Find the best coach.
I don't care if that guy has Power 5 experience or not. I don't care if that guy has ties to the program or not. I don't care if they've won a a conference championship at some other stop. I don't care.
You want a ball coach.
I just want somebody that's going to come in and do a good job. We've seen all the – we've checked all the boxes that we think make a great coach or make a great fit, and it doesn't work. That doesn't mean – you know, it doesn't mean it was – I get it. Everybody wanted Scott Frost.
Listen, nobody's going to sit here and say Nebraska made a mistake hiring Scott Frost when they hired Scott Frost.
No. No, it just didn't work out. That's right. Okay. It happens.
Sure.
We just had to I said we, but
you got
to
regroup.
That. Yeah. We just had to yes, I think there's just needs to be a recalibration, and if the fans could just recalibrate, just throw everything out, just start over. And it doesn't matter what they did in the 90s. It doesn't matter what they did in the 80s. It really doesn't matter what they've done in the last 20 years. Just look at what you have today and what you need to move forward and forget if it's a Nebraska guy or not. Just hire the best available coach that's willing to make the move, and you go from there.
To me, Nebraska fans got to stop thinking about hiring a guy that's going to just put him at the top of the pinnacle of college football. You need to stop it. What you need to do is find a guy that's going to get you back to respectability, yes, that's going to find a way to win close games, and get you to bowl eligibility first.
Yes,
you're not even close. You're 3-9 and 3-8 this year. You're nowhere close to bowl eligibility. First, you got to be bowl eligible. You're going to have to probably get the 6-7 wins, work your up 6-7-8 wins. That should be the goal right now for Nebraska and the next coach. Instead, there's a ton of Nebraska fans that are immediately thinking we're going from 3 to 10 or 11. You're fooling yourself.
You stopped scrolling and it just happened to be on Matt Rhule there. So I said that would have been my first choice. I know there's a lot of reasons, like 40 million reasons why he wouldn't take it, or he can just wait for another job that's more suitable to him. But that would have been my first choice. And I had a friend call, text back. He said, he doesn't win the big games. Well, I'm like, yeah, but he was proven to turn a program around. He took Baylor and he turned it around. Baylor was trash at that point, too.
Yes, and was so, trash.
Right.
And turned them around.
And turned them around. How about we start there? Mm-hmm. And then if in, you know, give him 2 or 3 years to turn things around. And then if he doesn't win a big game for another 2 or 3 years, we can fire that guy. Yeah, we can fire him.
Get a more attractive job and get you over the hump.
Yes.
Yes. But you are in the weaker division, although how that's going to work when the guy USC, UCLA, I have no idea how they're going to configure it.
Right, I don't know. Yeah.
Luke Fickell's another name that's been mentioned. That'd be a good hire.
It'd be a good hire. I just don't think it's...
I don't think it's happening.
I don't know why Luke Fickell would want to.
And what happened to Matt Campbell? I thought he was such a great coach. Oh, yeah. He's not attractive when you're in the bottom of the Big 12. Yeah.
Bronco Mendenhall came out the last couple of days as a possibility there.
Yeah.
And so it's
Jeff Monk in Army.
Yeah.
He's a run. I'd be going back to the old days for Nebraska.
The gymnastics, the mental gymnastics, these people that hated Urban Meyer, that hated Deion Sanders, that hate what these people stand for.
Sell out now.
Now, I can't wait till they come here. Not if they come here, not... Well, might come here when they come here. And I'm just like, oh, my God, please stop.
That's a sign of desperation.
Yes.
When you've gone from, no, I don't want those guys, to all of a sudden you've done a 180 at the end of the search, means you're desperate.
Oh, it was Urban Meyer's a cheater. Urban Meyer's this. He does that Ohio State cheat. So they do this and that. I hate Urban Meyer. And now it's just like.
He's going to save our program.
Yeah.
All right, Sunflower Showdown coming up Saturday night, KU, K-State. All right, the over-under, I think, is 62.5, something like that. The K-State's favored by 12 when I saw it yesterday. Let's make our predictions on this game, then we'll move on to the college football playoff rankings and then some NFL stuff. 6:30 pregame on Z96.3, The Lake. My oldest son said before the season, or not, actually he did, he said before the season, at the very beginning of the season, he said, Jalen Daniels is better than Adrian Martinez, and he said, KU's going to beat K-State in Manhattan. That's what my oldest said. He said it for the very beginning of the year. Well, when Jalen Daniels was a Heisman Trophy candidate and KU was off to a 5-0 start, he looked pretty smart. Now, Jalen Daniels, this will just be a second game back. We now have a bigger track record of games. And, well, Adrian Martinez is not the quarterback against Jalen Daniels. And we were talking about Jalen Daniels being better than Adrian Martinez. Will Howard might be better than Adrian Martinez. And I still think Adrian did a good job this year. There's no doubt he did. But Will Howard is just really, really improved. So, Here we go. KU, K-State predictions. And in the past, when KU's been bad, which has been for quite some time, and K-State, whether the K-State's mediocre at 6-6 or K-State's really good, and during the Bill Snyder years, and I've said this before every year, K-State might be favored by 35. Take K-State to cover. I mean, and it would happen. I mean, K-State be favored by 40. Take them to cover. I mean, it sounds insane. Take them to cover. Oh, so many blowouts. So many blowouts. Even when KU and K-State, the last time that they were both ranked and played, I believe it was 41-7, K-State held them. Yeah. So KU is not ranked. K-State's ranked 12th in the college football playoff rankings. So who are we picking? And then give me a score, all right? So let's leave Dusty. We'll leave Dusty for last because he's wearing the full purple gear right here, all right? So we'll let Jason start first. Who you picking Sunflower Showdown Saturday night? K-State needs a win to get to the Big 12 championship game. Yeah. Is KU going to be the spoiler, or is K-State moving on to the Big 12
championship? I like what Kansas has done this year, but I think it's over as far as the big things. I like K-State. I think they see what's in front of them. They're going to take care of business. 38-21.
38-21. Why did I let him go first? Okay.
Oh, did I take your score?
Pretty close. Yeah. Yep. I've got K-State 42-21 over KU. I don't think KU's defense is good enough. I think K-State's definitely the better defensive team. I think Jalen Daniels is still not where he was earlier in the year. I do have a concern he might scheme, and you might be going to Ethan Vasco as your next option. I don't know the situation with Bean and his health. So I think K-State is going to win this. I think K-State is going to win it comfortably. Maybe KU will make it. What I'm really hoping for is KU makes it a game for three quarters and see what happens. But I think K-State's going to win this game by – I got them by 21.
Yeah, it's funny you were talking about the K-State KU the spread with Bill Snyder coaching it. Mm-hmm. But that was the case until like the last 3 years.
Yes.
There was a game in Manhattan the last time they played in Manhattan.
And the climate area hasn't been so much.
No, KU should have beat them in Manhattan the last time they played.
Yes, they should have.
They played.
Their special teams was horrible.
Yeah, and they should have beat them the year before in mm-hmm. Lawrence. And yes. DJ Reed had a big kick return for a touchdown.
Yeah, special teams.
I mean, those last two matchups between KU and K-State under Snyder, KU should have won both of them.
You're right.
And so. I was like, this is really going to happen today? This is how we're going to – because we kind of knew that Bill was going out the door. It has been closer. They did beat them by 21 in Lawrence last year. Mm-hmm. I was at the game. So, you know, KU had some issues offensively clearly that day. But they're better this year offensively. But I think K-State is getting better and better every week offensively mm-hmm. and starting to learn what they have with Will Howard. I'm going K-State. I think I want to say lower, but I think KU might actually score some points in this game. So it's going to be very similar to what you guys had, but I'm going to go 45-24 K-State.
Yeah, pretty much similar scores we got. Now, I will say K-State's got Savage is out, and Sincere Mason now is out. So they got some injuries in the back end of the defense, and that could be a concern.
So that's why I go 45-24 mm-hmm. instead of 38-10 or something like that.
I just hope it's a great game. I hope that it's not what we're predicting. I hope it's super tight and it comes down to the wire. Now, if it comes down to the wire, KU's in trouble because they have a kicker who can't make anything. Missed another short one the other day. I mean, KU has no kicker. And K-State's kicking game has been better since Zentner became the kicker.
Since took over, he's been nails.
Right. Although, what's his longest field goal? What's his
53
longest?
Against – 53? It was at right before halftime against West Virginia.
So there you go. K-State's – as always, K-State has the advantage in special teams. And that – obviously has bitten KU a few times mm-hmm. when they've played in the Sunflower Showdown. So I don't think KU is quite there yet to beat K-State in Manhattan. Maybe the next time in 2 years when KU goes back to Manhattan, they'll be ready to knock them off. But I just none of us think that now is that time. We shall see. We shall see. Max is listening going, you guys are crazy, man. KU by 1,000. Could be. Very well could be that KU is going to win this game. And if so, then my oldest son will look like a genius. And you don't want him bragging around our house. That's not good. We'll never hear the end of it. Never.
Where does he get that from?
You know why? Because his youngest brother is the K-State fan.
Exactly,
in the family.
Yeah.
So he's going to keep rubbing it into the 9-year-old who's going to then get mad and throw a temper tantrum. Yeah. And older brother knows how to push his buttons.
Been there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's been saying it every week. He keeps telling my youngest. Yeah. Adrian Martinez is trash and Jalen Daniels is better than him anyway. And I'm sitting here arguing that. I'm like, Adrian Martinez, when he was playing well, I'm like, Adrian Martinez is a better quarterback than Jalen Daniels right now. Daniels could be the better quarterback. Well, now all of a sudden, Martinez hurt. Will Howard steps in. Now I don't even know if Jalen Daniels is a better quarterback than Will Howard. Honestly, I don't know. The way Howard's playing,
the way he's been throwing the ball, I would say no on that aspect of
right.
it.
Right. Now, if Daniels goes back the way he played the first 5 weeks, then
yeah.
Daniels is better than Howard. Athletically, I think he's definitely more gifted. But We shall see. All right. NFL schedule. NFL Chiefs Rams coming up on Sunday. The Chiefs will play that game at 3:25, pregame at 2 o'clock. Chiefs are a 14.5-point favorite of the Rams, who may not have their starting quarterback, Matthew Stafford, who's going through concussion protocol for the second time in 2 weeks. And the Rams are done anyway. They're 3-7. Stafford shouldn't play the rest of the year. Just set him down. There's no need. They just cut their leading rusher. They waived him, Daryl Henderson, which I think would be a good fit for the Chiefs if Clyde Edwards-Helaire's out for the year, but it's a waiver claim, and the Chiefs probably won't get him. You know, I think the Chiefs will be ready to go. They're still Aaron Donald. They've got a pass rush. Their defense isn't that bad. I mean, they got Ramsey in the secondary. I think the Chiefs could be a little bit flat. But I do think the Chiefs win and should win. I think 14.5 is a big number. You're going to face a quarterback you're not familiar with, more than likely. You got the running game's not good. There's no Cooper Kupp. There's nobody to scare you with the receivers. I would rather play Matthew Stafford than the backup quarterback if I'm the Chiefs. Because Stafford he's not very mobile that much. He stays in the pocket. Whereas the backup for the Rams, I forgot what his name is, but I'm sure he can move around a little bit. But still, having said all that, it looks like a somewhat of a gimme, which is hard to believe. Before the season, you never say it's a gimme.
No.
But now you're looking at that as kind of a gimme, and then you go to Cincinnati. And that's the tougher of the two. Bengals are playing better football right now. So, and maybe the Chase will be back. Mixon might be back from a concussion. Chiefs, Rams. They cover 14.5? I say they don't.
I'm going to say they don't because of the half.
I'll say they don't because the Rams get a late garbage touchdown. I think the Chiefs win comfortably, but it's hard to cover 14.5. And the Chiefs aren't really great against the spread. That's
no, they're not.
Not good.
No. It's like, man, they won, but again, missed the cover, even when they're lower scoring spreads.
Thanksgiving games tomorrow, 11:30 in the morning on CBS. It's the Bills at the Lions. Bills stayed in Detroit after playing in Detroit this past weekend in their game against the Browns. The Giants at the Cowboys, both teams 7-3. That's at 3:30 on Fox. Patriots at the Vikings. These are all pretty good games. 7:20 on NBC. Patriots 6-4. Vikings 8-2. See the Vikings bounce back. On Sunday, it's the Broncos at the Panthers. Sam Darnold now the quarterback for the Panthers. Baker Mayfield's been benched. Man, Man, Baker did not look good last week. Buccaneers at the Browns. Go Browns. Buccaneers 5-5. Browns 3-7. Bucks are 5-5. Still lead the division. Ravens are at the Jaguars. Ravens have a very favorable schedule the rest of the way, as do the Chiefs, for the number one seed. But the Chiefs have a one-game lead over Baltimore. The Dolphins host the 1-8-1 Texans, so the Dolphins should win. Jets host the Bears. Bengals are at the Titans. That's a big game. 6-4 Bengals. Titans 7-3. Falcons at the Commanders. That's a pretty decent game. Falcons 5-6. Commanders 6-5, but last in their division despite a winning record. Chargers at the Cardinals. Chargers 5-5. And need to figure something out so they can make the playoffs. Raiders are at the Seahawks. Rams at the Chiefs, as we know, at 3:25. Saints at the 49ers. Packers at the Eagles. NBC, that's an interesting game. And the Monday night game is the Steelers at the Colts. So that's the week 12 of the NFL football season. NBA note, Ben Simmons returned to Philadelphia last night. He's a member of the Nets now. 11 points, 11 assists, 7 rebounds. His team lost to the Sixers, 115-106. Get this, Simmons played, Harden played, Durant played. The Sixers, Harden's out, Tyrese Maxey is out, and Joel Embiid did not play last night due to a foot. And the Sixers still beat Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Ben Simmons by 9. Without their 3 best players.
That
I find is funny.
Yeah.
I do think addition by subtraction with Harden not playing, but Maxey's a really good player, and no Embiid, and they still beat the Nets, who had KD, Irving, and Irving came back and didn't look so great last night. Now, he came back the game before, and they did win, but the first game. So, there you have it. Simmons said afterwards, the booing wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. Well, get ready for the next time you go to Philly. There you go.
Don't tempt them.
Yeah, exactly. They booed Santa Claus. Anything can happen in Philadelphia. All right, the college football playoff, we end with this. The top four is exactly how it was. Georgia 1, Ohio State 2, Michigan 3, TCU 4. Stunningly, LSU with 2 losses is ahead of Southern Cal with 1 loss. LSU with the convincing, gigantic, amazing win over UAB. And USC with a win over the 12th-ranked team in the country. And USC can't jump LSU despite having 1 less loss. LSU, yes, they have 2 really good wins, in particular one against Alabama. LSU also got blown out by Tennessee. They also lost to Florida State. USC lost by 1 point to Utah because Utah went for 2 in the win. Utah's ranked in the top 15 at number 14. It's funny, I hear, well, LSU's losses are to number 16 Florida State and to Alabama. Yeah, USC's losses are to number 14 Utah and number 18 UCLA right now. So tomato, tomato. And oh, by the way, USC didn't get destroyed by a team at home like LSU did against Tennessee. And yet somehow LSU is still ahead of Southern Cal. Now, I will say this. Southern Cal, if they beat Notre Dame this weekend, Notre Dame is ranked 15th in the playoff rankings. They've been red hot. They've won, I think, seven of their last eight. If USC goes out and beat Notre Dame, if they beat them handily, I think USC should, and I would hope, jump LSU in the next week's rankings, right? You would hope. If they don't jump Notre Dame, if they don't beat Notre Dame, let me say it again. If they beat Notre Dame and don't jump LSU going into next week, then you can go ahead and call the system completely rigged because that's a joke. Alabama, with two losses, is ahead of Clemson, who has one loss. Clemson could jump Alabama if they win out. It's possible. Alabama, of course, you know, Alabama, I told everybody, they still have a chance of getting this playoff because of what happened. Tennessee and Alabama have the same exact record. Tennessee beat Alabama head-to-head, and Tennessee is three spots behind Alabama. It ain't about who you lose to. It's when. It's when you lose. It's when you lose. It's recency bias. And Alabama
beaten both of those teams.
That's exactly right. Tennessee has beaten LSU and Alabama. They all three have the exact same record, and Tennessee is now 10th. Well, Alabama lost two games at the buzzer. Well, what's the excuse for LSU? They got rolled by Tennessee, and they lost, oh, I know, at the buzzer because their kicker missed an extra point. Tennessee loses 63-38 because that's the recent game and because it was South Carolina, and they gave up 63, even though Alabama gave up 52 to Tennessee. Tennessee gets punished. Now, I think part of the equation is their quarterback tore his ACL, so they're punishing him for that too, and that's not how it should work.
No.
But whatever, it's always the moving goalpost with the College Football Playoff Committee, and it's an absolute and utter joke. And it has been from the day this thing was created. It was completely flawed. I said at the very day they revealed this, I said this system, first of all, it's not a playoff. Second of all, it is a joke because you have to at least have six teams in this playoff to make it legitimate because you need every Power 5 conference champion to be represented. If you're going to have a college football playoff where three of the four teams are SEC schools and a Big Ten school, that is not a playoff. And that's where we're headed possibly. Listen, based on what this is right now, LSU beats Georgia in the SEC title game and doesn't trip up before there. LSU, Georgia are in. Ohio State, Michigan, winner is in. And TCU is in. And guess what? The Pac-12 champion, Southern Cal, could be 12-1 and are not in. And they should be. So should all those other teams I just mentioned. Because four was never enough. And they're eventually going to go to 12. Dear God, why they haven't in the past, I've still never understood it. They all about making money. They can make billions more with a full-fledged playoff like every other level of sports can do. And so here we are arguing about TCU. Even if they win out, I don't think they should be in the top four. That's just dumb as you know what. Okay? They've earned it. Well, TCU, if they lose to K-State in a Big 12 title game, 12-1, they should stay in the top four. And I would argue yes. If they've gone undefeated all the way to that point, if Alabama listen, Georgia goes undefeated and loses to LSU, is Georgia out of the top four?
No.
No! But if TCU goes undefeated and loses to K-State on a last-second field goal, they're probably out.
Mm-hmm.
That's crap. That is complete and utter baloney, okay? The system is such a joke. It is a joke. And now you can sit here, and I got Todd sending me this stuff, because Todd apparently is now an SEC homer, and he sends me all this stuff, wink, wink, but he's telling me the four best teams. Well, there's a lot of people every single day, they say the four best teams are all in the SEC. Well, then just make it the SEC Invitational and let those teams have their own SEC championship. Oh, wait a minute! We already do that! We have an SEC championship game. We already play it out to see who wins in this division and plays the other division. Well, these four SEC teams are better than anybody else, so these three and Ohio State, Michigan winner are by far the best teams in football. Okay, really. The ACC sucks. Alabama should be ahead of Clemson. Okay, LSU lost to Florida State, an ACC school. Did you know that?
Yes.
They did. LSU, they're so great, they got blown out at home by Tennessee. Alabama is so amazingly good that they have had like five really, really big time scares, and they've lost two of them. And both times their defense didn't exactly show up. All right? And Michigan has a weakest schedule of all these teams so far, and they barely beat Illinois at home, who's a decent team. TCU has beaten everybody, and it's a round robin in their conference, and now they're going to have to play a team a second time, and guess what? Ohio State, Michigan will not have to play a team a second time, more than likely, okay? Georgia does not have to play LSU for a second time because they didn't play during the regular season. So there's problems right there. Southern Cal could be left out of the playoff because they lost by 1 point because a team had the guts to go for two and a win, and that game was at Utah.
And not very many people win in Utah. Huh?
No, and Utah's really good. Yeah. So please, please, somebody help explain it. And the only thing I can come up with, it is the TV networks and it's the College Football Playoff Committee being influenced. And I still tell you, go ahead and blindfold these College Football Playoff Committee members. Not necessarily blindfold them, but put all the resumes up on a chart, on a big screen, on a laptop in front of them at this big, huge table they sit at and drink coffee. All right? And you don't put a logo next to any of the resumes. And you then have a blind vote. All right? And then see where we end up being. And I will be willing to bet you, if you had a blind vote where you didn't have a team next to, no logo, you didn't know who was playing other than it was just 11 versus 11, and if you redid this, I'd be willing to bet you that I'd even go as far to say Georgia might not even be number one. It might be Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And number two might be TCU. And number three might be Southern Cal. And number four might be Georgia. But I'm going to tell you this, Alabama wouldn't be seven. No. And I'll tell you this, LSU wouldn't be five.
No.
Right now, the two biggest things right now for positioning went in SEC's favor last night. LSU ahead of Southern Cal. If LSU wins out, they're in the playoff. They'll be in the playoff.
For sure.
They will take the spot of the Michigan Ohio State loser. If Southern Cal wins out and LSU wins out, Southern Cal's toast. If Southern Cal LSU win out and TCU loses to K-State, then LSU Southern Cal are in. That's how I see it.
Just the way Ohio State and Michigan have been playing. Not that they've been playing bad.
By the way, Alabama's in. If TCU loses to K-State, LSU loses to Georgia, which I think we're all kind of predicting, mm-hmm. and Southern Cal trips up against Notre Dame or a Pac-12 title game against possibly an Oregon, or a rematch against UCLA or Utah, Alabama's in this playoff, people. Unless they're going to put Clemson ahead of them if Clemson wins out. And I don't know about that. Alabama's still not dead. Any team that has two losses should be dead.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? The two highest ranked teams with two losses, wait for it, are from the SEC. So at TCU, you lose once, you're dead. Supposedly. But Alabama, LSU, Georgia, you lose twice. You're conveniently still going to probably possibly get in if things fall right. Why? Well, the SEC's so good. Stop it. Kentucky's ranked in the top 10. They're a joke. Ole Miss was ranked top 10. They're not that good. All right? We always do this every single year. Doesn't it get old, people? Like, doesn't it get old?
It gets old, but nobody ever does anything about it, right?
You know, Georgia's so amazing. They won 16-6 last week against a team that's not in the top 15. So, I mean, I'm not saying there's any great team. And then I hear TCU gets smothered and crushed in the playoff. Who cares? Notre Dame's been in and got crushed multiple times. Clemson has been rolled in the playoff before. I mean, Oklahoma's made it and they've been rolled before. Why shouldn't TCU get their chance? Ohio State's been absolutely smoked and rolled in the playoff before. Don't give me this. Michigan State's been in the playoff and been rolled before. Yeah, it happens. So you're saying TCU's going to get rolled, they shouldn't get their shot? Well, why should all these other teams have had their shot and got rolled? Well, you don't have a big problem with them. Then why do you have a problem with TCU? Because they have TCU on their jersey instead of OU? It's complete and utter bias. And it is completely a joke. And the stooges that go on TV, I don't even name them by name anymore. Because I'm not going to promote their shows and their stuff. Because it's a whole bunch of propaganda and BS. That's all it is. Is that these guys are talking heads for a network that is in bed with obviously the SEC. And yes, what's ironic is ESPN's part of the Big 12 contract that the Big 12 just negotiated, and yet for some reason it's like, we don't really want anybody other than OU or Texas from that conference in the playoffs, so we're really hoping that TCU loses so we somehow can get them out. So then we got a brand name like LSU or USC. You know what would be really great is if Alabama could get in there, because, you know, Alabama's really, really awesome, and they just had some really, really bad luck and lost on two plays at the end of the game. But if TCU loses on a crazy play at the end against K-State, let's say K-State hits a 60-yard field goal, Ty Zentner hits a 60-yard field goal, and TCU loses, there's nobody going to be sitting there going, whoa, TCU, they played great and they're undefeated, and it's just a bad luck that they lost the very end of the game. No, no, there'll be no sympathy for TCU. But Alabama, oh my God, oh, Alabama. Well, Alabama, they, you know, they played that quarterback. He's pretty doggone good. That hooker kid, he's really, really good. Yeah, you gave up 52. You gave up 52. Georgia hadn't given up 52. Ohio State hasn't given up 52. Michigan hasn't given up 52. TCU hasn't given up 52. LSU, I don't believe, has given up 52. Maybe they did against Tennessee. I don't know. Southern Cal, okay, it's close. They got 45 last week. But it's just amazing how it's a moving goalpost, and the argument you make for Alabama, you then use against TCU. The argument you make for LSU to be in, you use against another team. Be consistent with your argument. I mean, how convenient is that to have it both ways? And I'm so sick of it.
And then they have the out. The out is, well, the eye test.
Oh, yeah. Because the eye test. Well, then let's go ahead and scroll on down here. You know what? Notre Dame has three losses, and you know what? They're the best team in football the last 7 weeks. Then just forget the other three losses and put them in. Right. If it's the eye test, then let's go ahead and let's put in somebody else has three losses because they started out slowly.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. That's their out.
That's their out.
You can't.
They're playing really good football right now, so let's disregard. I thought it was the body of work.
You can measure strength of schedule. You can measure, obviously, wins and losses. You can measure these power index things. But you can't measure the eye test. That's just something somebody thinks or believes based on what they're looking at. And so,
convenient cop-out, is what it is.
Yep. I'm not so sure Southern California, the USC, is not the second best team in the country right now. It's hard for them to see there's a path, but it's based on somebody else messing up and, you know, or tripping up somewhere. And I get it. They had their chance to beat Utah and whatever, but I'm not so sure. It's tough. It's
not tough.
Well, it's
you
not
have
tough,
you, you had you should have when you went from two and then you said playoff, you should have at least gone eight. It wasn't tough.
Yeah.
You go eight, and that's all they had to do. And instead, they put their toe in the water. Well, we're going. And then they called a playoff. And I'm sorry, it's not a playoff. When every conference every conference champion in Division I should have a shot. If it's a true playoff,
yeah.
They should. And let Tulane have their shot. TCU deserves their shot. And I would argue, as long as TCU doesn't get blown out by K-State, TCU deserves a shot even if they lose the K-State.
Tulane's the team back when I was in high school that
they got
was the
host.
Example of what you just said, and why I, even in high school in 1998, was like, we need a 16-team playoff.
Yeah.
So every conference champion has a shot. Tulane went 13-0 that year.
Yeah.
12-0, whatever, won a bowl game. I think that maybe they were 11-0, 12-0.
They were undefeated.
Back then, they only played 11 games.
Yeah,
back
then bowl game,
the season.
Maybe.
So they went 12-0 that year.
Right.
But it was a perfect example of this is not a system that helps anybody but the power teams, the teams that mean something. And, K-State was right in the middle of it. That's why I was paying so much attention, obviously, in 1998, because K-State was right in the middle of it and a week or a quarter away from playing in the national championship game. So it's...
And think about that. Now we're 20... They're talking, the playoff, the 12-team playoff, probably be 2025. They're hoping 2024, but they're dragging their feet. So you're looking at... You said 98. You already knew that's what we needed to do. And I think we all did. And so now, 25 years later, roughly, and we still don't have it. And we're doing these stupid song and dances and pony shows because some people in a room are using bias to put certain teams ahead of other teams. And it's like, here's an idea. At every other level of sports, professional sports, college, God forbid, even high school, everybody has a shot. And you play it out. But nope, not in college football. We have our little four-team invitational. That's what it is. It's not a playoff. It's a four-team invite. It really is. It's a four-team invite. It's no different, really, than four teams getting together in Kansas City that they just had at T-Mobile Center.
Through Wichita State, yeah.
That's all it is.
That's the comparison. It's your four-team tournament. You just don't play the third-place match, right?
That's right.
You don't play the third-place game, but it's four teams that you're inviting here to play, and it's a semifinal and a championship, and that's it. And two semifinals and a championship, mm-hmm. but get the point. And, yeah, I mean, you have to fight like hell to get Cincinnati into it last year, right?
Yes,
like,
you did.
It took forever and forever and forever for finally somebody to break through when it should have been maybe UCF. I don't know. Maybe just a thought.
Yeah.
Maybe some of the other teams before that even. Mm-hmm. Boise State is a really good example that comes to my mind, who was somehow – David against Goliath, Oklahoma, when Boise State was undefeated and was the better team and ended up winning that game. It is frustrating on that aspect of it that it took so long for even Cincinnati just to break through and have a sliver of a chance to win it.
Right.
And obviously they're going to put them at four to make them play Alabama. And
by the way, Cincinnati didn't do any worse than Notre Dame did. Ohio State getting blown out in some of those playoff games. Actually, they did better than those.
Yeah.
And they played Alabama. And it is an invitational tournament. That's all this is. And there's so much politics involved. Who knows how much money is exchanging hands under the table? I wouldn't be surprised at all by that. It's a money business, and you can make even more money if you actually had a real playoff, which eventually we're going to have. But I don't think this system, the four team, is any better than BCS. I said it from day one. This is no better than BCS, other than you're allowing two more teams to have a shot. That's it. That's it. That's all you're doing. You're adding one game. That's all you're doing. You're adding, in essence, a second semifinal, and then yes, technically you have three games. But that's just what you're doing. You expanded it a plus one. That's all you did. You didn't make it a playoff. You made it an invitational, and it is subjective to a lot of political bias, brand bias, and recency bias. And here's what I would like to know: if you're the goalposts always move every year, it's a different explanation. And some of the explanations that the committee chairman uses for why they put this team over another team makes them come across as clueless, because it applies to the other team that they put down lower. So they just need to, you know what would be refreshing? If they just came out and said, you know what, Alabama is going to draw more people to watch TV for the playoff, and we've got this big TV deal. So yes, now Alabama always has an advantage. Just be honest with me, because we're not stupid.
We take three players from each team in an NBA game in January and have them have a post-game press conference. You know, why not? You know, and when they announce the teams, they'll do the chairman of the committee for like a 5-minute interview.
Yeah, the spokesperson.
Why not have the whole committee sit there at a press conference for an hour and have them sit there and answer questions? People would watch it.
You could
televise it.
I would.
And people would watch it.
And you find out who's clueless that's on that committee.
Yeah.
That's why they don't do it.
That's
why they don't do it. But if you're going to be on the committee, you got to stand up to that hour. We would find out who's, you know, why certain teams are like this, and somebody would accidentally let the cat out of the bag, and it just cause an uproar, and you know, it'd be fun.
Yes, I get it. You expand a playoff to 12, 16, 32. I mean, we see NCAA tournament, you have 68. They're always complaining about the one that didn't get in. I get all that. But if you include all your conference champions, you can at least say, you know what? You had your chance to win your conference championship. You didn't do it. Thus, that's why you're not in. Now, you could argue, well, this team's in at an at-large because, you know, you can use the same argument you got now. But at least I can say that's true playoff, because you've got all your conference champions in. And I hear this argument a lot from even some football coaches that I know. Listen, there's only two great teams every year, and this is a waste of time. And you know, Cincinnati and Tulane and Central Florida, they have no chance of beating Alabama anyway, and so forth and so on. Well, you know what? Nobody thought Boise State was going to beat Oklahoma. All right? And I know Alabama lost a pretty big bowl game one time, too. Might have been Utah. And Georgia lost to Hawaii. And the excuse is, well, those games really didn't matter. Oh, okay. So, well, let's go ahead and see what happens when they do matter. You know, there are lots of times in basketball, where what makes the NCAA tournament so awesome is that the little guy beats the big guy or has a chance to beat the big guy. Now, I'm not saying that there's going to be as many upsets in college football playoff. I will agree with football coaches that I think it's less likely to have these huge upsets in college football playoff. But I will say this, even if there are two dominant teams, what are they scared of? If there's two dominant teams, why not still have the 12-team playoff? Number one and number two are going to be in good position. They're going to get first-round buys or whatever. And you know what? I would bet you significant money that when you play out 5 through 12 and the top four get buys, when you play 5 through 12 in the first round of the playoffs, I'll be willing to bet you there's at least two upsets in regards to seeding. Mm-hmm. Because it happens in the NCAA tournament. 12 beats a 5 all the time and 13 beats a 4. Wait a minute. That's basketball. Football is completely different. Listen, we see upsets all the time in college football. All the time in college football. Shoot, we see it in the NFL when the Colts beat the Chiefs, for crying out loud. I mean, if you give them a chance, you're going to have some upsets. It might not. Yes, if you have 16 teams and Coastal Carolina plays Alabama, is there going to be an upset? Probably not. But at least Tulane or Coastal Carolina can say, we got our shot.
That's why we only have four undefeated teams right now.
Right. You know, that's a great point. There's only four undefeated teams now. So that tells you that everybody gets beat by somebody except those four teams. And guess what? We're guaranteed one of those four to lose for sure. And that's Michigan, Ohio State. Mm-hmm. So what are we scared of? Are the big guys scared of going to a full-fledged playoff because they think they will get upset? I keep hearing this, well, it won't matter. It's just the inevitable. The top two teams are going to win anyway. Okay, fine. Well, give me a lot of excitement until we get to the championship game in the other games. And if Georgia and Ohio State are clearly the two best teams, fine. Let them steamroll through the playoff. I don't care if they win 1,000-0 in every one of the games they play. But all the other playoff games will make up for that because they'll be great games, there'll be some upsets, and we might have number 10 playing Ohio State instead of number 7. We might have number 12 playing number 1 instead of number 5. I mean, that's what makes sports great. And we've even seen it in college football, upsets every year in the regular season. We see teams that have no business beating somebody else. You're like, how did they lose to that team? Like, TCU might lose to Iowa State this week at home. And you're going to sit here and go, wow, TCU was a fraud. How'd they lose to them? Blah, 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 blah. Well, it happens to teams.
Yeah, we're going to call TCU a fraud for losing to Iowa State. But when there's good teams that sitting there at like number 17,
right,
and we're going to say, well, they had a good year.
right.
Yeah, and like, well, they lost to an Iowa State-ish team somewhere along the way too, you know. And so it's just, you know,
expand the tournament, you have more chance for chaos, you have more chance for upsets. And if it goes, you know, if the top seeds win out, I bet you they're still close, competitive, good games. They're not all going to be blowouts. I just don't. I'm so tired of hearing that little bit of an argument from some people. Like, well, it doesn't matter. Well, I've seen it in some of the years. We have the playoff, right? I say that loosely. The 4-team playoff. Two semifinals are blowouts. See? Why do we need a 12-team playoff? Because those games weren't close, and we all know Alabama and Georgia are head and shoulders above everybody else. Yeah, but if you had a whole bunch of other games, even if the semifinals are blowouts, you could go back and go, damn, remember that those quarterfinal games were out of this world awesome. Yeah. Listen, the Final Four, do we do the NCAA tournament, guys, and the Final Four games end up being kind of lopsided, and the championship game isn't that exciting? Do we go back and say, wow, that tournament sucked?
No,
we're sitting like, man, that last second full court buzzer beater to beat Florida in the first round, that was amazing. How about the win to send Arkansas to the Elite Eight? What a shot that put Villanova in the Final Four. We don't judge the NCAA tournament based on whether the Final Four is not any good and it's not competitive. So why would we do the same thing with football? We wouldn't.
Yeah. See, and this is just personal. I like a little bit of the exclusivity of it. Four is not the number. I understand that. And I understand you go to 8, 12, 16, whatever, you're printing money. And anytime you have a chance to print money, you should do that. And so I understand. I get it. I'm not going to sit here and cry and say, I'm not going to watch these things because the 16th best team's in it. No, I'll watch it. You know, but sure. You know, I do like doing this every week. You know, I like this.
I don't. I'm stressed. I'm so sick of the political crap that goes on.
I don't want to argue who's 13th and who's 12th as much as I want to argue who's 4th and 5th. But you know, but I think 8 to me is the number. But you know, I'm okay with going to 12. It's not like I'm not going to watch it. Like you said.
Listen, here's the thing that I like about the NCAA tournament. And this is what I like about the NFL, and this is what I like about really any sport except for college football, Division I. I can go Division II, III. I can go through every single sport, every single level, and I can tell you why I love it compared to this dumb, you know what, 4-team invitational. Is that every one of all those other sports is, if you win your conference championship, more than likely you're in, or if you have a great year, you're in. Mm-hmm. All right? You've earned your spot. And to sit here, and if the season ended today, and you're telling me that LSU should be in over Southern Cal, you're telling me Alabama should be in over Clemson, which maybe they should. I don't know for sure. It's all your opinion anyway. It shouldn't come down to you or I's opinion. It should simply be, well, we play it out. Yeah. You know, if I win, if I'm 10-1, I deserve a shot at a national championship.
Yeah,
what a concept. If I'm 10-1, God forbid I have one bad day. God forbid I have one bad day. Oh, Alabama's two bad days. Ah, blow it off. But some other team has one bad day. Well, that just toast. They're done. They're done. No, they're frauds. No. You should be allowed to trip up once. I'm okay with that argument. Oh, they had a bad day. They lost the last second thing. I can live with that argument. But anybody with one loss or zero losses should be in the college football playoff. If you win your championship, you're in.
Is there room for the best 3-9 team in the history of college football?
Nebraska's in their own invitational.
Last year.
Nebraska's in their own invitational. This year they can improve their record with a win over Iowa on Friday and move up to 4-8, and that should probably be enough to save Mickey Joseph's job and make him the head coach for good, because nobody else wants to coach the Huskers. Aren't you glad you brought that up, Jason? Mm-hmm. Remember, Nebraska's football program is the 7th or 8th best sport on campus.
Oh, we dropped one.
Yeah, they dropped
rankings
one.
Came.
But you keep losing your drop.
Rankings came out.
Your drop.
New rankings came out.
You drop. Yeah. That's just how it works, man. Are you tired of this? Dusty, this whole college football playoff thing.
I've been tired of the college football system since the BCS was introduced.
And since they screwed K-State in 1998, too, that whole system.
Yeah.
The system's been broken for a very long time. There's been different ways of tweaking the system, calling it something else, the BCS, the BS, as some people said, now the college football playoff, whatever you want to call it. Until we include all of the major conference champions, this thing is not complete. And thus, to me, it is not a playoff. And we eventually are going to get there. And the fact that it has to take us 25 to 30 years to figure this out is mind-boggling to me, because all of these guys seem to be worried about money. You would have made a buttload more money if you'd gone to this years ago. That is the one most astonishing thing I think I've ever seen in sports, is the stubbornness about, well, we got the bowl game tie-ins. That is one of the dumbest things ever.
And I don't want to make
easily,
this longer.
You can easily fix that. You can give the Rose Bowl, you know, an extra, give them a percentage of the purse, for crying out loud, and they'll shut up and quit complaining.
Yeah, I don't want to make this longer, but I literally, in 1998, when I was talking about this, I was a kid. You're having fun. You do stupid stuff, right?
Sure.
Like, so I was literally making out brackets for a 16-team playoff and writing, this can be the Insight Bowl or the Copper Bowl, whatever it was that year. This can be the Peach Bowl. I'm putting the bowl game tie-in with every single matchup on the bracket, because you can do it.
Yes, you can.
If you're worried about the tie-in, if you're worried about the corporate sponsors, make these bowl games. It doesn't change what they do. It changes when they might play the game.
Right.
Liberty Bowl is always on New Year's Eve. Well, okay, well, they're going to move that up, but you're going to be part of a prestigious group of bowl games here in a playoff system that's going to decide a national champion. Mm-hmm. You don't think they want to do that? Of course they do, because the bowl games are the semifinals of this playoff right now still. Mm-hmm. It's the Fiesta Bowl, the Rose Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, the Peach Bowl, whatever it is. One of those games is still called a bowl, and it's a semifinal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I did this in 1998. Like, I'm writing all this out, and I'm putting bowl games tied in with the playoff, and that's exactly what they're going to do and keep everybody happy. It's not hard, and make more money. I'm at whatever 14, wasn't worried about the money part of it.
Sure,
that wasn't my thought process at the time, but nowadays it is, because that's what drives everything.
Absolutely. That's what blows my mind. Money drives everything, and they would make way more money had they gone to this in 1998 or 2008 or even last year. And I've never have understood that, and nobody can even explain it to me. The cop-out is the bowl tie-ins. Oh, you can easily solve that by throwing money at it. Now you can solve that in a heartbeat. Like, dude, okay, oh, the Rose Bowl wants to get all uppity and don't want to be a part of this? Fine, see you later. We got 100 million more reasons why we don't need you. You want to be a part of it? Then you buy in, Rose Bowl. I mean, well, that's a tradition. Well, now you care about tradition? You've got you got USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten. You got Rutgers in the Big Ten. You got West Virginia in the Big 12. You got KU Missouri not in the same conference. You're sitting here going to talk to me about tradition? That's when you're going to play the tradition card?
I mean, you don't have to think too hard to think there might literally not be a Rose Bowl as we know it in 5 years if the Pac-12 doesn't.
Well, yeah, they might have nobody left over there.
There might not be a Pac-12 Big Ten tie-in because if the Big Ten poaches a couple more and the Big 12 poaches a couple more and these teams that are left go here, that there just might not be a Pac-10.
I keep hearing that. Well, it's tradition. Well, you got that Big Ten versus Pac-12. You know that USC Texas national championship game in Rose Bowl was maybe one of the greatest teams ever played.
There was no
Big Ten representative, and it wasn't traditional. And guess what? People still say it might have been the greatest college football game that was ever played. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be a Big Ten tie-in. It don't have to be a Pac-12 tie-in. It would be nice to have a team on the West Coast in it. I get that part, but that happens with anything, any bowl game. You want to have somebody that's a regional tie-in. I get all that. And by the way, we end with this. Max says, I told you Max was listening when I made my bold predictions that K-State would make the NCAA tournament in men's basketball, and I said that K-State would beat KU in one out of three tries this year if they play in the Big 12 tournament. And I knew Max would have a comment. And I'm guessing Max hasn't watched K-State play basketball this year, probably. All right. And I'm not saying he should. He's a KU fan. He should probably just watch his team. That's fine. But Max says, and I think it's a very funny line to end this, and it's a perfect time to head into Thanksgiving thinking about this. And it might be even possibly true, and I'll let you stew on this as we sign off, ladies and gentlemen. You can decide whether or not Max is right in his assessment of listening to us today. Max says, and I quote, I wish I was on the radio and could drink on the job. K-State won't win in basketball, goodness sake. So you can decide whether we've been drinking a day early before Thanksgiving.
Drowning your tears on Saturday, Max.
I will tell you, I have family coming into town. I started drinking Monday. Have a great day.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.
Katy Country 94 weather.
Whether it's spiders, ants, or other pests making your home or business their own, Schindel Pest Control in Concordia has a pest control program that is right for you. From mice to bed bugs to termites, find a solution that fits your needs and your budget. Schindel offers pest control for both residential and commercial, plus their technicians provide the best customer service possible. Schindel now has the Termidor HP injection system, a state-of-the-art termite treatment to control termites. Visit Schindel Pest Control, 109 West 5th Street in Concordia, or call 243-2554 and let them eliminate those pesky pests.
Here's a look at your local weatherology forecast. Highs level off around 53 today under overcast skies, winds out of the south, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight, lows level off around 31. Tomorrow, high of 45. Upper 40s Friday and Saturday with a chance for scattered rain showers Saturday. From the Weatherology Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on KD Country 94. Currently, it's 41.
Sims Fertilizer and Farm Chemical, Osborne, Kansas. If you'd like to save money, call Sims Fertilizer in Osborne today. That's what they do best. Save you money. Call them toll-free, 1-800-821-4289, or visit them at simsfarm.com.
Simpson Farm Enterprises carries the Apache line of sprayers, and there's a reason. In fact, there's several reasons. Apache sprayers come in five different models to fit every size of operation. They feature premium technology and the exclusive power-to-the-ground mechanical-driven traction. Most of all, the five-year warranty offered by Apache is unmatched. That's why they have the highest retained value in the industry. See Simpson Farm Enterprises today at any of their five locations and spray with the best you can buy.
Passionate about country and passionate about you. What a concept. KD Country 94, KDNS.
She said there's no sense of working if it's just staying hot. So dip your toes in the water, baby.
this is the spot. Well, it feels good, good, good. Yes, it feels right, right, right. Oh, it feels good, good, good. So we're gonna lay back and let it ride. Here we go. Well, I bought a scratch-off ticket. Well, the winning guy. Saw the whole land goes. It feels good, good, good. Yes, it feels right, right, right. Oh, it feels good, good, good. So I'm gonna lay back and let it ride. Oh, let it ride, boy.
Dusty Donis back over here in North Central Air and Downs with Rex. What's new, Rex?
Yeah, Dusty, we've got a lot of the new Hondas in. We've got the 5.5 Honda twin tank, 14 CFM. We have an 8-horse Honda, 3-cylinder, 22 CFM, and we have a 13-horse Honda.